Okay, you just barely passed the eighth grade exam.
Yes, and so consequently...
And you cheated to do it.
So consequently, I did everything I could possibly do. But I didn't realize how close it was. But so consequently, when I got to be a freshman in high school, things were terribly hard, terribly wrong. The good subject in high school for boys was agriculture. Mm-hmm. I had already made up my mind I didn't want to be a farmer, so I had nothing to do with 4-H and all of these things, which would have been extremely good, you know. And so I didn't do that. I thought, oh, I'm going to be, you know. So I took French, and I forget what else. And
probably some science and some math.
Yes, yes.
In an English class.
Uh-huh.
You had to do some writing.
I guess so.
And history, world history, ancient history.
Yes. But I had to learn how to learn.
Uh-huh.
But my freshman class was real, real hard on me. And at that period of my life, of all things, I don't know if it's from eating too much creamery stuff or something, I broke out in boils and pimples, and I was just in a mess as a kid in high school. I was only about 90 pounds.
How embarrassing.
Yes, and I was bashful to begin with.
Yes.
My freshman and sophomore years were real, real
misery.
Yes, personal misery.
I was so embarrassing
with mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. I did.
This was LeGrand High School?
No, that was Embler.
Embler High School.
Yes, Embler. And of course my folks had to move, I say had. By that time my brother was in high school, and for him to get to school, we moved first year to Somerville, so that he could, that was on me, almost 5 miles closer than from home, and at home why roads were all snowed in the wintertime. So we moved to Somerville, and if somehow or another we could get a ride from some kid that did have transportation, we'd get there. Otherwise we'd have to walk it, you know, or get a ride on the way, which didn't always happen. But the point being is that here we were then living in Somerville with new acquaintances. So it didn't do all that good, learning.
Well, before we get on too much to high school, why is it that you and many other people, apparently, according to this Observer article, have this deep attachment to Dry Creek School, and you want to come back year after year to have a reunion?
Well, that's the only one-room school that is still standing.
No.
And incidentally, the picture that they put in the paper was the Somerville School and not the Dry Creek.
Well, I know of at least two others that are still standing and still could be used as schools.
Where are they?
Mount Emily and Willowdale. Willowdale is over near Hot Lake.
Oh, really? I didn't even...
They haven't been converted to houses or anything. They've been temporarily used for storing things like wheat in the Mount, or hay in the Mount Emily School, but they still stand. But Dry Creek is probably the outstanding example. But it's not just the fact that the building is there, is it, that keeps you coming back?
No, it's the people. It's the people, and to mix with other people that we knew earlier. This becomes more cherished as I grow older, at least.
But is that because it was a one-room school with 8 grades in one room?
No.
Well, what was special about the people then who went to it?
Because they are our best friends that are quickly disappearing.
Right.
I will draw an example. I would never have gone to what we call a retirement place to eat at lunchtimes. I wouldn't have even thought about it. We had one up in the valley where we had lived, and my wife, I'm talking about my wife, my first wife, or my previous wife, until she passed away, my whole life completely changed. Close friends that knew for so long and long, all of a sudden, I'm not a part of them anymore. It's a life fact that will happen to each one of us that have it happen to us. That's how Elma and I got attached to each other. And it was after my wife passed away, about 2 or 3 months, that one close friend of mine, his wife had gone back to Bremerton to stay for a while, and he started going to the senior center down there. And he finally talked me into going once. And all of a sudden I met people that I'd never known before. But they were my age. They were my type of people to visit with. And within a year, I became the president of the group. And I was closely associated with them until Elma and I left this valley that I had lived in for so long. And to this day, there's tremendous joy in going to this center down here. Why? It's the people. It's not the management of it. It's just so comfortable to relive. And I find often, you're somebody that knew somebody that I knew, just like visiting with you, I all of a sudden feel like I know you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you feel like that or not. Huh?
Well, yeah. The first time I ever went down there was by myself. I'd rather go to McDonald's and eat a hamburger. I was too young for it, I thought.
Well, maybe there isn't anything in particular about a one-room school that forms allegiances in people for the rest of their lives, although I'm speculating that there might be something there that you wouldn't find in other larger schools.
Well, that's...
Perhaps because you know the people there, when you're children, or better than you do in a larger school.
I'm sure that's true.
And a lot of people, of course, talk about how the older kids help the younger kids, and that makes a special kind of bonding among all the kids in that school.
Is that understanding?
You think that's true?
Not to me.
Some did, especially when there were more than one in a family. The older ones could help the younger ones. Another thing that we always found was interesting. Sandy had an aunt that lived about a half a mile from the schoolhouse.
They call me Sandy, but it's Lyle.
Tell me that, yes.
I had, my brother and I boarded up at my aunt's, which was a little up the hill from Sanderson Springs. Well, there were 5 of us kids that would have to walk to and from school, just from Aunt Willem's place. Then we picked up Sandy and all his cousins down along the line, so there was about 8 or 10 of us all together. And every night when we would go home from school or start home from school, one of us would have to have a drink of water at his Aunt Bessie's place. Well, she always had cookies or apples or something, so we'd all get treated, but somebody had to have a drink of water before we got going. That was quite a memory.
And she, down through the years, she was always Aunt Bessie to every kid that lived up that direction. She had a, you can take things off that you don't want to hear on that. She and her husband, she was my aunt. She and her husband had 3 children. And they lived on a hill, up over the hill from where I was newer. And these children were probably up to maybe 6 or 7 years old, I'm not sure. But I guess it was either the 2nd or 3rd of July, the parents their parents, Aunt Bessie and her husband, Uncle Bert Oliver, had gone out to milk the cows. They had a mantle, and I have to assume that the mantle may have had a clock or something on it, and up a ways. But they had a table down low. Now, this was in July, so it's hard for me to imagine, except it was quite awfully late, because they had that table with a kerosene lamp sitting on the table. Well, the oldest of these three children got up on the table to reach up to the mantel where they had placed some fireworks, like firecrackers. They tipped this table over, set the house afire. All three children perished. That was my Aunt Annie.
Your what?
I mean Aunt Bessie, yes. And my Uncle Bert got badly burned.
And they turned around and had three more.
They built a house down below and to start all over again. If everybody should have had a nervous breakdown, it should have been one of those. They had three children, but she just loved kids. And when they'd come home from school, why, she'd always have something. Just a loving, loving. She would never say anything bad about anybody. If she said anything, she said, well, that's probably what they said, but there's something always good about it. She never said anything I ever heard directly bad about anybody.
They used to have Easter gatherings there, and everybody around would bring food, honey, and they'd hide Easter eggs for the kids and have prizes for them. Kids would have all their new Easter clothes on. It was quite something to look forward to. I've missed that, I think, more than anything. In my later years.
So we grew up with their three children. You know one of them, but still alive, one of the very seniors. Emery Oliver is one of her, that's her second of the children that they raised later. Emery should be a great source of
Marshall knowledge. Kilby is interviewing him.
Oh, yeah.
Marshall owns Dry Creek School, as you probably know.
Yes. Yes, but Emery has such good memories of things, much better than I do.
Good. When you were growing up in the Somerville Inler region, were you aware of crime of any sort?
Yeah. Only on Halloween, dipping over toilets and putting wagons up on
that's not exactly
house.
Crime. I suppose it's illegal technically, but you kind of expect it.
One thing that might be interesting is, while I was quite young at the time, there was a sheriff of Umatilla County. His name is Till Taylor. There is a monument standing in Pendleton to this day commemorating him, Till Taylor. And there were two, I believe they were escapees from the state penitentiary who killed him. And they were loose, and those days, not much for telephones, I think, but people would keep track with other people. And there was a report that these two men had escaped up through somewhere in the Grand area and were traveling across what in those days were called the old Woodard Trail, Woodard Road, which later has become the Elgin Tollgate Highway. So a posse of perhaps six men were formed north of Somerville, one of which was my uncle, Bert Oliver, Emery's dad. And these five men were told that these people were probably seeking places to get warm and perhaps get some food at a sheep herder's camp. which is near the road going through there. So this posse came upon this place one evening, and one of them went up to talk to the sheepherder, and the other stayed back. And the sheepherder told me, yes, those two men were there sleeping, which pointed out where they were. And the rest of them came in and took these two without incident, recaptured them. I can remember that real well, because that was so unusual to have that kind of a crime. Mm-hmm.
What kind of illegal activity could young people have gotten involved with at that time around here?
Drinking.
Yes, yes. Drinking. Of course, there wasn't too much. There wasn't too much to do with too much drinking. It was pretty well tolerated, and pretty well stayed within bounds. Occasionally, there was an automobile accident. Sometimes deaths, but there was no real crime involved with it as far as prosecuting.
Did you feel as though you were living among honest, virtuous people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if there was such a thing, that type of a family or persons were identified and everybody knew about it, word of mouth. Like, for an example, there's cases where perhaps some grain was stolen. In those days we had grain in sacks and piles. Or if there was, we didn't have hay balers in those days, there was just hay in a field. And all. But if things like that would happen, or something disappeared, and you pretty well know who took it, you know. And it was usually right. And those people would become identified, and they would be pretty much isolated as far as friendships with the families were concerned. And generally, those people would move out of the valley again. I can think of a few cases like that. Can't you?
I can think of one that was our house. When I was just a kid, or just about first grader, I guess, so Mom had a bunch of these Roundup handkerchiefs, and stuff packed in boxes at stairs that we didn't use very much, and other things. And I came home one day, and the neighbors had been into it. We saw them wearing. And when Dad would have the grain in shocks out there, why, the grain in front of the shocks in front of their house kind of dwindled down to nothing, because they were throwing them over the fence to their chickens and pigs. Other than that, like.
One of the recent additions to the Elgin Museum Historical Society is an old jail. With a building maybe 8 by 12 or so, bars on the window. It's sitting next to the Opera House now. And I gather that was outside of Elgin, not too far. Why do you think that they would have needed a jail there?
Well, maybe cattle rustlers or horse thieves.
All right. You didn't mention that. Yeah. Were they around every once in a while?
Oh, I think so. I can't recall any personally, because I was a kid, I didn't know the difference between a horse thief.
Well, this could be from your early adulthood, too.
But, some place to put a drunk.
More likely a drunk than a horse thief?
Yeah.
What role were you aware that churches played in people's lives, let's say in the 1920s and the 30s?
I went to Sunday school at the church there in Somerville. And my Sunday school teacher was Mrs. Starnes, and what she said was law. And I tried not to miss a Sunday, And we'd have church services in the evening. And I sang many times, my mother sang. Solos are for a program. And she certainly taught me not to, I mean, one of the Ten Commandments that I remember so clearly and try awfully hard to stick with is, thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. And it just makes cold chills go over me when I hear somebody do that. But she was a wonderful Sunday school teacher.
How did she attain her power, her ability to make you think that what she said was the law?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what her religious background was, because she was there when I went. And she was just a good person. And like I say, I really don't know. Just, I was at that age where there was something to look up to. We had missionaries come through and hold, or evangelists come through and would hold these meetings. And I joined the church. I was baptized in the Cove swimming pool.
Is it the Baptist?
I always thought I was a Baptist, but come to find, or I always thought I was a Methodist, I guess, come to find out. I don't remember which one.
Baptist,
okay. So then I found out I was Baptist, but I didn't know the difference.
Can you tell me more about why people seem to accept so readily the precepts and the rules of the church?
I really can't. I don't know. I don't know if it's the way it's presented to them. Is this what you mean?
Yes. One way that some churches try to make people do the right thing is to threaten them with hellfire and eternal damnation.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't... I did believe that there was a hell and a heaven. And... but I don't remember them... Of course, you know, these evangelists get going like... anything comes out. But I can't tell you, age. Sure.
You felt it, though? You felt that the church was an important influence on people's behavior?
I felt like it was, but I didn't think, I didn't solve it.
Did they define for you what virtue is?
No. If they did, I don't remember. God, that's been 80 years ago. Well, 75 anyway.
I'm always interested in how religion, as it manifests in... I turn this off.
A few things. I never did believe in smoking or drinking. I swear once in a while. And
you drank that beer and then spit it out, so I guess that was the beginning of your not wanting to have alcohol.
But to me, they were not religious. I mean, a religious person didn't do that. Then here.
Why? What? Why would that, doing those things, make you not,
well,
not a good religious person?
Well, this is the way she taught us. You don't know, a good person doesn't smoke, they don't drink.
Did she call this sin?
I think so.
So you've got a concept of sin.
Uh-huh.
Sin was any behavior that other people would say was normal, but the church has said was not.
That was my impression. Mm-hmm.
Straight and narrow, would that be another term that
applies?
the straight and narrow definition of life.
Yeah, that's Baptist, I think.
Yes.
And what I know, the definition or the thinkings of all the churches, I have no idea. But I was sitting downtown a number of years ago, and where I could see the Presbyterian Church, and some of the men came out on the sidewalk, lit up a cigarette, smoked it, went back in. Now, to me, that wasn't religion, the way I had been taught. But I know they do that.
No. There, those are effects of the church on everyday behavior, the choices that you have to make between doing this or not doing this. Now, what about the theology part? In Christianity, most churches, the theology, the divinity of Jesus Christ and the resurrection and the salvation and so on, is fairly prominent. Were you aware very much of the theology?
Not too much, other than Easter Sunday and Christmas. And like I say, a kid at that age doesn't have too much to do.
But are we talking only about when you were very young? Are we talking?
I didn't go to church much after I was.
Why?
Well, I had, and this is an excuse, I had three kids. I had cows to milk and chores to do, and I couldn't get it all done.
That's a good reason. So you found it fairly easy to lapse from church attendance? Did you figure, well, I've already learned the important lesson, so why do I need to keep going back?
I didn't think too much about it, really.
Now, Sandy says that hardly a church was darkened by his presence. You just didn't have any connection at all with churches.
Well, yes and no. I should have had quite a lot of influence. My background from my mother's side, there was, for a lack of a better word, when this Hug family came from Switzerland, they were six grown children, and they came to this country because their mother, for lack of a better word, was, in my opinion at least, she was a zealot. Church came first, then down the line was family and so forth. So she, with her six children, came to the new country. She personally felt that she had a calling. I think I'm right on this. Brigham Young. She left her husband and one grown man, son, and there's quite a story in this book about that here, and came to Utah, and the chain of circumstances arose, which is not told in here, but they, the mother was disillusioned and she died within a year, and the husband she left behind died within a year. So these six children tried to make a living in southern Utah, and I'm not sure on my facts on this, but I'm of the opinion that this grandma Niederer, who was originally a Hug, was the first white child that was born in Santa Clara, Utah. And I don't have facts that back that up, but I accept it as probably true. And
her name was Clara.
Clara. So over the years and growing up myself, I have nothing either way on the Mormon religion per se. My 1 year living in Ambler during my fifth grade of school, I was friends with my closest friend, boyfriend, was a Mormon, and we went to church almost every Sunday. It wasn't that my folks said, "Oh, you must go," or "No, you don't need to." It was just that it was pleasant. And then when I got into high school in the wintertime, why, I would live with them often in the wintertime because of snow to get to school. And so during that time, I would always go to school, go to church on Sunday, and they had a group called the Trailblazers, which is similar to the Boy Scouts. I enjoyed doing. So during those periods of time, they were very pleasant experiences. But as far as absorbing the church as something that affected my life, Lynn, my friend, and his family affected me quite a bit. But this so did other people who were otherwise. So I never did become engrossed with it, nor did I find that I didn't like it for any particular reason. Not that expensive or not. So going on throughout my life, I did have some experiences in churches, some good and some, from my feeling, very bad, which I won't delve into.
Did you have the sense when you were fairly young, living around here, that there was considerable religious tolerance, that there wasn't any particular denomination that was looked down upon or persecuted?
I grew up that way with my parents. Under my parents' supervision, I grew up that way, yes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until later that I became somewhat involved in one circumstance bad and mm-hmm. one that was extremely good. But I, to this day, don't have, as I explained to you a little while ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want me to put that on here or not.
I don't think we need to.
Okay.
My grandmother, Conrad, came from Switzerland also, and she came over when she was, as I get the story, about 6 years old, and she came over with Mormon missionaries. So she kind of leaned towards the Mormon religion, but Grandpa never would, but he did a lot for her with the Mormon, for the Mormon. They lived in Utah. My dad was born in Utah. And then they came here to the valley. And as I get the story, he was the first one to bring Hereford cattle in here. Now that I don't know really whether it was or not. But they settled out in the center of the valley here and lived here. And they had one child born here in 1900. And the others were all, I don't know where they were. Dad and some of his brothers I know were in Utah. But I haven't tracked them all down yet.
When either of you were in your early years, did you have any contact whatsoever with people of another race?
No, there weren't very many people around at that time. I mean, like there is now, you didn't. To me, there's just as many bad white ones as there are black ones, and there's an awful lot of good black ones.
Most of the Chinese had probably left La Grande by the time you could have been aware of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
definitely.
There has been a small black community in LeGrand, however, for most of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Chinatown down under was down where the Ford garage used to be. I don't know what's in there now, but on Jefferson. I remember my dad used to, he was hurt in the war in back, and he used to get some kind of a concoction from the Chinese. As I remember, it was a yucky green color, but he would drink that stuff, and it was supposed to help him. I don't know, maybe it was...
Probably an herbal mix.
But I was too young to know anything about that.
Well, can I ask about religion and race? I'm just trying to get at any perceptions you might have had about tensions or disagreements or lack of respect for people who didn't fit quite the majority look and set of habits.
Now, are you asking us in relation to Union County?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
None whatsoever for me.
I
think there was a, without even realizing it, I think there's some little, just somewhat, feeling which, without discerning it, you just never quite accepted interracial marriages.
That was nationwide
and that
for quite a number of years.
And it was not until I got out in the big world before I started encountering it.
Now it's a common thing.
Yeah. Well, not exactly related, but let's talk for a bit about any awareness you had of politics, local or regional politics, and how they might affect anything that was happening in this county.
Oh, absolutely.
This is a politician. I'm not.
Right. I came to the right place to ask.
She's a Democrat and I'm the Republican. And if I look back, it was that my grandfather, Niedruhr, was a Republican. My good cousin, Emory Oliver, he's a lifelong Democrat. And we all constantly are digging up something to dig each other up with.
Well, I'm very interested in what persuaded, I guess, the majority of people since this county was formed to lean toward Republicanism.
You're asking me now?
Well, I'm interested in that.
A wonderful one to ask, because really, it was just that my mother and dad become Republicans, particularly because my granddad Niedruhr was a good Republican.
So you're a Republican out of habit.
Of all the people, I think of all the people, of course I tremendously respect my mother and my dad, my mother and my father, but to me the greatest picture I can picture of anyone is my grandfather Niedruhr. Yet I was not all that close to him, but just what he accomplished, what he did in his lifetime, is just to me his picture. Wish I could be more like him.
Well, when it comes to a choice of a political party, did you have any conversations with family members that persuaded you that they had the right take on politics?
My principal effect was after I went to work for Union Oil Company. Hmm. And I was never in, I've never belonged to a labor union in my life. I was always in sort of a supervisory position or a management position. And so my life was among people who had pretty much that same thing, and I'm sure if I look back, that happened after I went for a corporation.
Not much that would be traceable to your experience in Union County then. But affected your choice of a political party?
No, it was my family.
Even now, when you reflect back on your earlier days, can you see any actions or strong statements of belief that would suggest that they were somehow identified with a Republican ideology?
No, all my life I've been very strong, right or wrong, I've always been. But in my last 10 years, I somewhat questioned once in a while, because certain things that one party, and of course that's strictly because I am a very avid listener to politics,
and I think we
sometimes get too much of it, and I think that I get over-influenced, mm-hmm. and some of the people that are so strong on one thing and not on another.
Maybe you should switch over to NPR radio. You get a more balanced
view.
Well,
I tried to do that, but then I don't know. If I could just pick the best out of the two.
For to switch over to Disney World, yeah. And get your mind off of it a little bit.
Were you aware at all of county government?
The what?
County government in Union County?
Not really, other than that. I might say when the first I remember, Dad was a Republican, and I was a Republican. And then after I got married, there was a fellow running for an office that was a Democrat, so we switched over to Democrat, and I've been Democrat ever since.
It sounded as though there's any
even more so
there.
When I got this Republican.
Yes. But weren't there things that the county commissioners were doing that affected you in some way?
No, not really.
No?
I didn't pay too much attention to it, really. I think you can get kind of carried away with it.
Or you can be oblivious.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I don't know which is worse.
Yeah.
They're both bad reactions.
Could we quote you on that?
Yes.
Well, that's interesting, because I got a letter from the Republican Party today, which wants to give you, I've carefully chosen as a Republican,
yes.
to get the viewpoints. And I know that'll inevitably lead to, they want a contribution.
Sure.
So it went in the garbage.
Okay.
Because I'm not that much of a Republican.
Well, related to politics somewhat is the judicial system. LeGrand has had a courthouse, or Union County has had a courthouse, first in Union, and then in LeGrand, and there was a big controversy about that, where it should be. I think maybe some people around Union are still angry that it was moved.
Yes.
I suppose you would have heard about some people who had been brought before a judge for some reason. Any perceptions about how the judicial system works in this county, or has worked?
The only thing I can say, and the only time I've had much anything to do with it, my son had some stuff stolen from it was his house for a while, now it's just a shed, out on the Foothill Road, and the people were caught. And he had to go to court one day and was...
What did they do?
Well, they had caught these people and they were trying to getting this... Oh, shoot, what were they doing? Getting this gal, this happened to be a girl, and she was being brought up for sentencing, and he was supposed to be there. The judge, I won't mention any names, but he sat there
snoozing.
And pretty soon he made his decision. She was supposed to pay Tom so much money and all this, that, and the other. And I thought, ye God, is that the way our judges do? But I didn't have much use for him in the first place, so I wasn't.
He wasn't the most attentive of judges.
No. Mm-hmm. And he's a very prominent man.
Never having lived in the valley during my adult life much, I can't make any things that would show much light.
Boy, those old bombers are sure going out fast. Must be going over there to fire. You can still see some of the smoke up there on the hill. Mm-hmm.
That must be Wallawa. But in today's world, I think that a great many things that happened are opinions that I formed quite long ago. For an example, my grandpa and grandma. Grandpa Need were, to me, I just picture him as he was always neat. He was always orderly. He always had everything just great. And to this day, there are particularly two men that come to our senior center, and they are politicians. And both of them are very impressive. And I would be hard put to know for exactly are they a Republican or a Democrat, but they present themselves well, they're neat, they're ordered, they speak well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they take the time to, I'm sure they talk to all types of people, but they are people that I'm impressed with.
Did either of you have memorable experiences with anybody in the medical profession in your early years?
I have one particular. Shortly after I went to work for Union Oil Company, I went out hunting one afternoon, deer hunting, north of Somerville, way back where I was born and raised. And had a fellow hunting with me, and unfortunately he shot me. And
in the what?
Part of my leg, blew this side of it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a pretty rough experience getting into town and getting to a doctor. And fortunately, I had had another minor accident happen late at night at the service station where I got a hold of this man. He was a new doctor that just come to town. His name was Dr. Otten. And he took care of me that night. And I was so impressed with him when I had this hunting accident. All I could think of, I want to go to him, which I did. And he was a young man, but he had studied at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. And this was in October of 1941, just the day before, I mean, a little while before Pearl Harbor. And he took a look at it, and he said, I've got to get somebody that knows more than I do. So he got another doctor. And this other doctor had told him, he says, well, we better take the kid's leg off. He's been nearly 4 hours in this gunshot wound, and he's bound to get blood poisoning. And Otten said, no. He said, just before one of the last things I talked about, I told him I would try to save his leg as I could. And he says, we've been getting miraculous results from sulfate drugs. They used them back there, and they had them here, but apparently the older doctor didn't even know enough about them to make it. He says, well, we'll work on him. We'll try to do best we can. But is this pretty bad? Because something like that, such a mess, he just gets blood poisoning. Just be cut, cut, cut. Might as well take it off now. But we'll work, try. And they saved it. Now I'm still kind of late. So he was always just my precious favorite doctor because of it.
Now this must, his, you must have been taken to the original Grand Ronde Hospital.
No, it was the St. Joseph.
Oh, St. Joseph.
Yeah. Huh? 1941.
That's right. It was in operation about the same time as the white one on the hill going out of town, wasn't it?
The old Le Grand Hospital, you mean?
Grand Ronde Hospital.
The old one.
Yeah.
Going out of town.
Yeah.
Well, this...
It was a while after that. When did that go out?
Well, I know about when it went out, but it was in operation at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was still in operation, but the St. Joseph was quite new then.
Yeah. Can you describe how it looked or smelled?
What, the hospital?
Yes.
No, your leg.
No, the hospital.
Well, of course, it's probably the first and only time I've ever been, was ever in it, but I was in it there for some little while. And not necessarily. I was in quite a lot of shock because we were about 3 miles from the car and 20 miles from town, and it was getting dark. And we got tangled up in chaparral brush getting to the car.
You were still able to walk on it, apparently.
The kid that shot me, he was little like me, but he was very wiry. And he would run. Of course, he's just wild. He's just almost... I almost had to threaten to shoot him to take you, get me out. He wanted to go get somebody, and I knew he'd never find me, you know. And, I was bleeding reasonably bad. So I would, when he'd just give out, then we were carrying our guns with us, and I would take one and jump up to it, because no, I couldn't walk on this.
I hope the guns were not loaded at that point. So your experience at the hospital was probably kind of vague and fuzzy for you. You weren't in a high state of alertness.
Well, after the operation and the next day or two or three, everything else was very, very... Once they... I suppose it was ether that they took me out on. I don't really remember.
The nurses were nuns?
No.
Some of them.
Some, but not.
I thought all of them were.
They were like Hamilton, Mrs. Hamilton, Earl Hamilton's son, his wife. For a little while, I had a definite crush on her. She was so lovely. But, took care of me. And then there was a Filipino young man that worked in the hospital as a sort of a, what do you call him?
Orderly.
Orderly. Mm-hmm. He's still alive. He's 90 in his late 90s now. Wonderful man.
Santos? Santos?
Paul Santos? Yes, Paul Santos.
He was a custodian, John Turner tells me.
Okay, that's it then, huh? Well, isn't this wonderful how you tie all these things for good questions on? Huh? Yes.
Well, and of course, I'm learning the network here.
And of course,
figuring out how things fit together.
That particular summer, it was the second year that the college had introduced flying at the college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first year, Glenn McKenzie flew, and I was ripe to be drafted. So I thought, well, I'll try and see if I can get a commission out of it. So I signed up for that, and you got night classes for meteorology and navigation and things like that at the college. And then you flew during the daytime up here. And so I'd already completed my primary flying, and at that time I signed up in the Army Air Corps. Went into secondary flying. This October 23rd was when this accident happened. And, the day of Pearl Harbor's first day, I drove a car after the accident. And, so, of course, by then, why I was put into 4F permanently. Ended my flying career, ended my military.
So the injury was severe enough that it that exempted you from the draft.
Oh yeah, I limped badly all my life up until 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I got a new knee, and they lengthened my leg out. I was real bow-legged and always limped. So up until 15 years ago.
Now, you told me, I think, earlier that you had 2 years of college at Eastern Oregon Normal School, as it was called then. Part of that then was the classes related to flying?
Well, no.
No,
I'd already graduated in 1936, and this was in 1941, but I had additional classes where I got credits for while I was flying.
You graduated from Eastern Oregon Normal School in 36.
Yeah.
Was that with a four-year degree?
Two.
And was that supposed to be for teaching?
No. Junior college. 2 years of college.
They didn't call it junior college then, did they?
No, I went to a normal school, but they called it junior college.
They did.
Because I didn't take any academics for teaching in those days. No, I took economics, and my majors were economics and psychology.
Now, what turned you around to want to do that, since the eighth grade?
I didn't want to be a farmer.
Oh,
very
no.
Simple.
I
got out of college, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do.
Your first 8 years were pretty much of a flop. You had a terrible freshman year. You probably just squeaked through high school. Why would you want to go to college?
No, my last two years were real good.
Oh, you had a renaissance.
Oh, I had a renaissance. But
you learned to have study.
That could be.
Yeah, in fact, to play basketball at Forest Grove.
Scholarship?
Scholarship. Mm-hmm. I had to have a good grade to do that. No,
well, you weren't 6'1". How could you play basketball?
I didn't. I played baseball.
Oh, you said I said baseball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we had a good team.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
But that was before the injury.
Yeah. 35, 36, thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I took classes at the normal school the first year it was in operation.
29?
I was in the third grade.
at Ackerman?
No, they didn't have Ackerman then. It was just the normal school.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
in
right.
The main building there.
The experimental school, I think they called it. Or lab school, that was what it was.
Yeah. I know I didn't want to go there anymore, so we moved on the other. I went on the other side of the street and lived with my grandmother.
Why didn't you want to go to it anymore?
Every 6 weeks you get a batch of teachers.
Student teachers. What was wrong with that?
You just get used to some of them, and then new ones have come in, and to me, it was kind of a turmoil.
Oh, you wanted more stability. Mm-hmm. Mm. Otherwise, was it enjoyable being there?
Yeah. Yeah, we were going to have a puppet show, and my castle got picked for the puppet show. We had to draw a castle. I don't even remember what the show was, but we had to draw a castle. And mine was an orange one. Got picked. I don't know who picked it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any more details about that school or about the building?
No. Other than it was just still standing, and I'm scared to death they're going to start in on it one of these days.
You mean the building, the in-law hall? Oh, no, they're preserving that.
They're better in the steps, too.
Well, that's a problem. The steps need repair, and I talked to Jerry Young, who's the president of the EOU Foundation. They're in charge of it, and it's going to cost in the millions. Partly because there's been erosion, and they need to do new drainage, tile drainage or pipes, and something about vegetation, some kinds of roots or something like that that's growing in and destroying the roots there. So it's a big project.
Well, they better get some money and do it.
They'd like to very much. Money is the problem.
Because that's part of the college.
You remember Evensong?
Oh, you bet.
What are your memories of it?
Just how beautiful it was, and then graduates all coming down the steps, and how they'd stand there. They'd stand out in the rain, if it was raining, and watch them.
What did you think it was all about, why they were doing it?
Just graduating from college.
Well, I know, but you don't have to go through some rigmarole like that. Why did they do it that way?
I don't know. I never thought anything about it.
Except that it was beautiful.
That's just the way it was. Uh-huh. It was beautiful.
Do you remember about the lighting, the symbolic lighting of their torches?
Not really.
They all carried flashlights. When they got down to the bottom of the stairs, there'd be a place where they would get their torch, turn on the flashlight, and then they went off into the desk.